is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Venezuelan no want to see the Gambian youth are employed again. He want to see the tourism industry back again. It has been one of his major concerns.
That's Gambian Tourism Minister Hamat Ba on the decision to reopen the tourism industry, the backbone of the country's economy. Details coming up. Also, South African Airways has resumed flight after being grounded for 18 months due to bankruptcy. These stories and more on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. Cameroon's military says separatist fighters have for the first time used anti-tank rockets smuggled from Nigeria to attack army convoys. The military says rebel rockets attacks in the past week have killed at least 15 troops and 13 civilians and destroyed several armored vehicles. Moki Edwin Kindeka reports from Yaoundé.
A Cameroon military helicopter landed Wednesday at a military base in Bamenda, an English-speaking western town. Among the top military officials were Defense Minister Joseph Betty Asomu and Cameroon's Defense Staff Chief, Lieutenant General René Claude Meka. Asomu says President Paul Biya wants a change of military strategy in handling the separatist crisis. He says Biya wants his military to immediately stop the bloody and treacherous attacks on government troops by separatists equipped with increasingly sophisticated weapons.
Immaterial exterior.
Asomo says military intelligence indicates that fighters are benefiting from outside human and material support.
The perspective.
Cameroon's military reported this week that separatist fighters for the first time launched anti-tank rockets on military positions. The military said Thursday several armored vehicles were destroyed and at least 15 troops and 13 civilians lost their lives when an anti-tank rocket was launched on a military convoy in the western village of Bamising last week. The military says rebels attacked government troops with anti-tank rockets four times this week in western villages, including Sabga. Asomo did not give details on how the military has changed its approach to the separatist crisis. He, however, said troops have been adequately equipped and deployed to separatist hotspots in English-speaking western regions, especially on the border with Nigeria, suspected to be the origin of the anti-tank rockets. Issa Chiroma Bakari is a Cameroonian politician and leader of Cameroon's National Salvation Plan political party. He is also Cameroon's Minister of Employment and Vocational Training. He says English-speaking civilians should help government troops by reporting those suspected of smuggling separatist weapons from neighboring Nigeria.
We need the support of our population. Please denounce them. Decry it. The kind of arm they are using. This is an indication that there is a kind of support they are receiving from abroad.
In August, Cameroon and Nigeria said Cameroon separatists called the Amazonian Defense Forces and indigenous people of Biafra, a group that wants a breakaway state in southeast Nigeria, were partnering to create an alliance. Prince Ekoso, president of the opposition United Socialist Democratic Party, says Biya should call for a ceasefire to spare the lives of both troops, civilians and separatists, dying as a result of the armed conflict.
It's time to end the war. Everybody in the Northwest and the Southwest is bleeding in his or her heart, and the whole country is bleeding. It is not helping us. It will not help us.
Separatists have congratulated fighters on social media platforms like Facebook and WhatsApp for using anti-tank rocket launchers to kill Cameroon troops. Videos circulating online appear to show separatist fighters asking for more anti-tank rocket launchers to fight the Cameroon military. Cameroon has always complained that separatists use porous borders to import weapons through Nigeria. Cameroonian and Nigerian authorities met in the Nigerian capital Abuja, August 26 to August 28, and agreed to jointly fight armed separatists in both countries. They also promised to stop arms trafficking in the two countries. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
South African Airways has taken to the skies after being grounded for 18 months due to bankruptcy. A business rescue process that concluded in April left the national carrier solvent but looking for a private investor. Reporter Vicky Stark was at Cape Town International Airport this morning when the maiden flight from Johannesburg touched down. She filed this report.
First to appear through the automatic sliding door at the domestic arrivals terminal was anti-corruption crusader and private investigator Paul O'Sullivan, who claimed to be the first passenger off the flight. He reminded the small group of reporters about his lengthy battle against former South African Airways chairperson Dudu Mieni, who was eventually barred by the courts from holding any such position in the future. Under her watch for 5 years, the airline went from making a profit to losing billions.
Well, I'm delighted because, as you probably know, I took on Dudu Mieni. I started my campaign against her in 2014. I was arrested multiple times. I was dragged off planes. My premises were searched a number of times. Eventually, Dudu Mieni has been declared a delinquent director, so South African Airways has been saved.
Also on the flight was SAA's new executive commercial, Simon Newton-Smith. He explained why they chose to start with African destinations, namely Cape Town and Johannesburg, and later Accra, Kinshasa, Harare, Lusaka and Maputo.
Restarting an airline is tough at the best of times, but doing it during COVID means that you have to think about the market very, very differently. So it's about which markets are open. Which markets we can see there is still demand and there has been demand through COVID, and where we can frankly afford to be competitive in the market and still make money. So that's really informed where we fly in the very short term.
Analyst and editor of SA Flyer magazine Guy Litch says he has mixed emotions about the relaunch, especially since the deal with the chosen strategic equity partner, the Takatso Consortium, which will own a 51% share, hasn't been finalised yet.
On the one hand, it's obviously really great that they have emerged from the business rescue process and are getting back in the air. However, there are still so many problems remaining. And obviously, one of the big questions remains, what's going to happen with the Takatso Consortium? Are they going to actually get into bed together? Are they going to provide the necessary operational skills and presumably access to new aircraft? Because at this stage, SAA is operating on a very limited route network with very obsolete aircraft. It's never going to be viable on its reopening route network. So it's going to bleed even more money than it has been bleeding.
Critics say the airline, which has had numerous government bailouts over the years, is a vanity project. While Litch wouldn't comment on that, he says he is worried about its viability.
I'm very concerned that SAA will try and get back market share by operating at sub-economic fares. In other words, just trying to buy back market share. And, of course, that just means that the losses are going to deepen and they're just going to come back to the South African taxpayer for a bailout sooner rather than later.
Initially, there will be 3 return flights between Johannesburg and Cape Town per day. Vicky Stark for VOA News in Cape Town.
New Zambian President Hakainde Hichilema and U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris praised democracy yesterday and talked about how they overcame strong electoral challenges. In the first visit to the White House by a Zambian leader since 1992, Harris talked about how their election victories reflect the power of democracy.
So we think of this as being historic in terms of the significance of your visit and your election.
Thank you.
We recognize, of course, that in addition to the great ties between our people, we both share common values and a common vision of what is possible in the midst of the challenges that we all face. And today, of course, we share a commitment to democracy. And we understand and know that to strengthen democratic institutions means to respect and uphold the rule of law and to lead, understanding the significance and importance of fighting for all people and their rights and human rights. Last month, we watched as a historic number of Zambians voted for you, with young people leading the way.
Indeed.
And I would say that is indeed democracy in action.
The 59-year-old Hichilema convincingly won Zambia's tense, sometimes violent, August 12th elections in one of the biggest victories in the country's history.
Well, thank you very much, Vice President. And I must start also by congratulating you. It's a bit late, but we did it at the right time. You and the President for winning your elections here in a, I think, decisive way. And we're following in your footsteps. We too were delivered by the people of Zambia in a way, under very difficult circumstances, democratic space not being available, since you talked about democracy. So, but we're very grateful to be here, to be invited to the White House after so many years of leaders before us who were not able to be invited here. So we feel honored, Vice President, that we're here.
Hichilema is in the U.S. for the annual UN General Assembly. South Africa's battle against COVID-19 may soon get a welcome shot in the arm in the form of booster vaccinations from the Johnson & Johnson or J&J pharmaceutical giant. The country remains the worst affected on the continent, with almost 3 million infections since the pandemic began and almost 90,000 deaths. The J&J vaccine is particularly important for countries in Africa, as it is highly effective as a single shot. Now, scientists say a booster offers even higher protection against COVID-19. Darren Taylor has more.
Dr. Glenda Gray runs J&J trials in South Africa and is also president of the country's Medical Research Council.
Even with one dose of the J&J jab, we got immunity that was durable even up to 8 months. But additional data has shown that certain subgroups of people, like elderly people or people with other immunocompromised conditions, may have waning immunity. And so by boosting the single jab, you can really amplify the vaccine-induced immune response. And it's great.
Ideally, she says, the booster shots will happen 6 to 9 months after the initial dose. Gray says this gap allows a person's immune system to mature and to get full benefit from the second vaccination.
We are busy evaluating that, so no one can tell us exactly when is the best time to give a second dose. We're busy designing different boost strategies in South Africa. We want to be in a position where we don't have to boost everybody every 6 months, but it would be good if we had a strategy where we boosted everyone every 9 months to 1 year. We want to give the best regimen with the best effect to people in South Africa who've had the single dose J&J.
The J&J vaccine trial began in South Africa about 7 months ago. The jab was given to almost 300,000 healthcare workers under a study known as Sisonke. Gray says this group will also be the first to receive a second vaccine.
We'll also be looking at other strategies, like boosting a single dose J&J with a Pfizer boost, and we'll also be looking at half doses. So the question is, do you need a full dose of the vaccine, or do you need a half a dose which will kind of tickle your immune system and cause a nice boost of your immune response?
But some in the medical community doubt enough vaccine will be available to allow the luxury of second jabs. Gray says her team's working on overcoming this problem.
We are in negotiation with the Department of Health and J&J to secure a big consignment of the J&J vaccine to be able to boost the healthcare workers in time for the fourth wave.
Scientists are predicting that a fourth wave of the pandemic will strike South Africa in December. Gray's hoping J&J will donate 500,000 doses to her program to immunize nurses, doctors, and others in the health sector before infections begin to rise once again.
Not everybody will need a boost immediately, but we do believe that people who are highly exposed particularly our healthcare workers, may be the first people to need a boost. That's also because they were the first people in the country that got the vaccine.
The scientist says the Sisonke study is important not just to South Africa, but also the world, because it helps to understand COVID-19 variants and how best to combat them. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The Gambian government says the West African country is now open for tourism. It says vaccinated tourists will not be subjected to any rapid COVID test or quarantine. Reporter Pandera Mbai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Tourism Minister Hamad Bass says the decision to reopen the country came following talks between his ministry and the health ministry. He says visitors with a clean COVID-19 vaccination record are free to visit during the coming winter tourist season.
Upon consultation that with effect from 1st of October, any visitor to the Gambia, any visitor, if you have a QR code or you have a certificate certified that you are fully vaccinated, you are free to come to this country without PRC test, without any rapid test, and you will not be quarantined.
Bas spoke during President Barros Meet the Farmers Tour to hear the concerns of farmers. Like many countries in the region, the Gambia suffered a major economic blow from the COVID-19 pandemic. It led to the collapse of the tourism industry, with hotels and restaurants closing, leaving thousands out of work.
President Barrow wants to see the Gambian youth are employed again. He wants to see the tourism industry rebound again. It has been one of his major concerns.
Tourism is the backbone of the country's economy. It contributes greatly towards the nation's gross domestic product, GDP. Tourists have been avoiding the country because of the global COVID-19 lockdown. Now that the vaccines for COVID-19 has been found, countries have started reopening. Bas says airlines would be required to ensure visiting tourists met the vaccination guidelines before boarding. Meanwhile, according to Bas, the British government has decided to lift the travel restrictions that were imposed on Gambian diplomatic passport holders.
British government also have agreed to lift some of the conditions for those carrying diplomatic passports. They have only certificated few countries' certificate in the world. They will be sending a team to the Gambia in consultation with the Ministry of Health to look at the Gambian certificate. If they are satisfied with that, Gambians also will enter Britain without any test certificate or anything else.
The Gambia is a major winter holiday destination for tourists from the United Kingdom and Europe. For VOA News, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
An inquest has been launched into the fatal shooting of four Namibians by Botswana soldiers who suspected them of being poachers. The inquest will determine if the soldiers will face prosecution. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokandisi Dube has the details.
Botswana's Director of Public Prosecutions formally registered the inquest into the killings yesterday. The public hearings will take place starting November 15 in Kasane, near the border with Namibia, where the shootings took place. Deputy Director of Public Prosecution, Wenson Manjwe, asked the court to set aside 6 weeks for the inquest. At least 22 witnesses from both countries are expected to take the stand. Manjwe says international protocols were followed in establishing an inquest, and the Namibian authorities were informed of the process. Area Member of Parliament Kenny Kapinga says it is procedural to launch an inquest to establish if there was any wrongdoing in the shootings.
Our president always emphasizes that he believes in the rule of law. If a person dies in this manner, there should be a transparent, open investigation which will conclude with an inquest to determine if there is need for prosecution.
The killing sparked widespread protests in Namibia, with Botswana vehicles getting stoned after entering the neighboring country. Namibians accused Botswana of using a shoot to kill policy. This prompted a meeting between the country's presidents, with Masisi offering a full investigation into the incident. He also denied Botswana has a shoot to kill policy to fight poaching.
We do not have a policy of shoot to kill, or a program, or a project, you know what you call it. We do not. You know, as often happens, when something happens a number of times and repeats itself, a label is put to it. Every nation state has a rules of engagement in its territorial space. And we are not different from Botswana. We do have rules of engagement.
Botswana is faced with a poaching challenge, with more than 20 poachers gunned down in the last years, most usually cross from Namibia and Zambia. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Habroni, Botswana.
Former Chadian President Hissène Habré was ordered to pay tens of millions of dollars to victims of human rights abuses after his conviction by a special court in 2017. But by the time he died in August, Habré's victims had still not received a dime. That might soon change, as Anika Hammerschlag reports from Dakar, Senegal.
The African Union-backed court tried Chad's ex-ruler Hissène Habré in Senegal and found him guilty of crimes he committed in the 1980s, a first for the continent. On September 15th, a team of AU lawyers arrived in Chad to meet with victims' advocates, lawyers, and government officials to begin the process of establishing a trust fund for Habré's victims. Habré oversaw the killing and torture of tens of thousands of people during his rule as Chad's president from 1982 to 1990. When he was convicted, the African Union was ordered to raise about $150 million that would be allocated to more than 7,000 of Habré's victims. The money was supposed to come from Habré's assets, as well as from outside contributions, but the victims still haven't been paid. Their plight gained renewed attention in August, when Habré died just 5 years into his life sentence. Jacqueline Moudena is the lead counsel for Habré's victims. She says the African Union has not made much progress. They have yet to furnish their headquarters and hire an executive secretary, among other tasks.
Donc, il reste encore beaucoup de choses à faire.
There's still a lot left to do, she says. They waited 4 years, and they don't know how many more years they'll have to wait. If it were up to her, they would have done it all in 1 week. One important task is raising money. Magitonke Traoré is the director general of Chad's Ministry of Justice. He says the Chadian government will contribute money toward the trust fund, but he doesn't know how much. He says many of the victims have already passed away, but the fund will provide relief for those who survived. Clément Abayfouta is one of the surviving victims tortured for 4 years during Habré's rule. He witnessed the deaths of many fellow prisoners and in some cases was forced to dig their graves. Now 63, he serves as president of the Association of Victims of the Crimes of the Hissène Habré Regime, an organization advocating for victims and their families. He says now that the African Union has come to expedite the process, victims are satisfied and they hope the process will go faster than expected. Experts from the African Union plan to return to Chad in the coming weeks to continue setting up the trust fund. Annika Hammerschlag for VOA News, Dakar, Senegal.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abbaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here. Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the interview.